Wow, there is O. Let's call him Coach Spread Orgeron. Tigers look terrific now. The Longhorns await. There is no second guessing. There is no we played it close to the vest, but you had to be impressed with the Raging Cajuns. The Saints down to 53, and they wheeled and dealed to get there. We'll have an update. Plus, the story behind the story, was it Jimbo Fisher? Was it Tom Herman? We end up with Coach O. Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated goes over the story today, Monday, September 2nd, 2019.
Derek Stingley back to field this punt, put up by Anthony Beck. Stingley going to field it at about the 34. Breaks a tackle, far side, 45-50, 45-40, 35, and eventually brought down at the Georgia Southern 34-yard line. 37-yard punt and a return of 32 yards by Derek Stingley. And that's a pretty good debut for the true freshman out of right here in Baton Rouge. Burrow in the shotgun. Here's the snap. Pump fake. Now has time. Across the middle. Again, caught at the 30-yard line. Breaking free. Justin Jefferson near side. 15-10 to the 5. Hemmed in there and dropped down around the 2-yard line. Out of bounds near side. Big first down for the Tigers of 45 yards.
Here it comes. Ground ball left side, waiting on a Toro. He's got it. Throws across in time. And that is the ball game. A no-hitter. Justin Verlander, the third of his career. The Astros mob him in front of the mound as the Astros win it 2-0.
Burrow in the shotgun. Here's the snap. Pump fake. Now has time across the middle. Again, caught at the 30-yard line. Breaking free, Justin Jefferson near side. 15-10 to the 5. Hemmed in there and dropped down around the 2-yard line. Out of bounds near side. Big first down for the Tigers of 45 yards.
Oh, good afternoon and welcome. Some of the sounds of a glorious, glorious weekend. Only Nolan Ryan with 7. Sandy Koufax with 4 have more no-hitters than Justin Verlander. But hey, 55-3, the LSU Tigers come out, and it looked like they've been running this offense forever and a day. What a debut it was. Joe Burrow was sensational. We got a busy 1 hour for you today, because at 3, we'll switch it over for the Astros on this happy, I hope, Labor Day for you and yours. So we're going to rapid fire with guests extraordinaire today, starting with Brooks Cabina of The Advocate. It was all about Joe Burrow, 23 of 27, 278 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, and to me, no sacks was telltelling. Brooks, happy Labor Day. Thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
Hey, no worries, man. I got to get in quick. Those Astros are rolling in.
Astros are rolling, but the Tigers were rolling. Could you ask for a better display in a debut than what the Tigers rolled out Saturday night?
I think Ed Orgeron and Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady are all very pleased with what happened on Saturday. I asked Ed toward the end of that press conference, all the questions that have been around about this offense, did 55-3 answer that? And he just kind of, chuckled at that and said, you know how that goes. They've got more to go. They've got more to prove. And it's got to honestly come against a team like Texas. It's got to show that the ultimate test, like we've said in the preseason, is this the offense that solves the problem against big teams like, and most of all, Alabama. So that's still a test that's coming down the road.
Right.
But the initial test is passed with flying colors. And you mentioned Joe Burrow's 5 touchdowns. He was announced today as co-offensive player of the week for the SEC, along with Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama. I mean, his 84.5 completion percentage ranks 5th in school history at LSU. I mean, he was on his game. And that's something that we talked about the RPO can do. That is exactly how it's supposed to work. He's supposed to be able to find open receivers, multiple receivers. He threw it to 14 different guys, and all three of the starting wide receivers had touchdowns. That's the kind of distribution that they said could happen. And I think the biggest thing, Jordy, here is they did it all out of one personnel package. It was
yes.
three wide receivers, one tight end, one running back, and they showed that they could be diverse. And they kept all the other stuff away from the game film with Texas. There's still stuff that they can roll out. So I thought that was pretty funny. After the game, you know, we were asking Joe Burrow, someone asked him, okay, is that everything? Is that everything from the office? And he said, yes, it is. And I want you to write that. I want you to go out and report that. That's it. And of course, it's not. But you know.
Obviously, it's not. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate joining us here on this Labor Day. But again, I don't care who you're playing against. Look, no turnovers, no play clock, delay of games. People seemed to know where they were supposed to be, and they got there. It seemed like such a smooth thing on the offensive side. We'll get to the defense in a minute, but from a perspective of first time out, seeing this thing, poor Burrow looked comfortable. Everybody looked comfortable. All Terrence Marshall does is catch touchdown passes. They threw to the tight ends. They threw screen passes. They showed diversification, albeit, as you said, in that 11 package with the one running back, one tight end, three wides the entire night.
Was the big thing. And this is Georgia Southern. Their pass rush isn't going to be anything close to what Texas is like, or even the Alabamas and Georgia, if they get to
right.
something like that and face the Bulldogs later on, or Florida mainly, we'll talk about, and Auburn as well. But, you know, it was encouraging for them to see that. It's the first time since the Troy game, to bring that up for LSU fans, that they hadn't given uh-huh. up a sack in a game. And
yes.
one of the biggest things was Sadiq Charles did not play at left tackle throughout that game.
Right.
It was Bedara Traore at left tackle, and actually Cameron Wire was in there a significant amount of time, and Wire hasn't – that was his first time playing in Tiger Stadium, and they didn't have any issues. And I think it had a mm-hmm. lot to do with how fast they were playing, how fast they were getting the ball out. Ogeron still felt like Joe Burrow could do quicker next game. He said that he'd probably have to do that, but it was very encouraging to see from their perspective that they could keep people from getting in, because Louisiana Tech last year, they did give up sacks, and for them mm-hmm. to make that step forward, that was certainly something that they wanted to see out of the first game.
Brooks Cabina, The Advocate, kind enough to join us. The other positive, seven times LSU entered the red zone, seven times they got 7 points. They weren't forced to kick a field goal. Not bad for a team that was 119th in the nation in red zone touchdown percentage a year ago. This, after week one, they lead the nation. So I don't care who you're playing against. When they got there, they scored. Now on the defensive side, boy, they're fast and they fly around. It looked like they'd been practicing against that triple option. Georgia Southern had nowhere to run, nowhere to go.
There's a good. There was a couple of good film studies done last week heading up in the game. One of them I took a look at on theadvocate.com, and then there were some others that were out there. One of the main things about what Georgia Southern does is there is a zone blocking scheme up front, and it's different from that triple option you'll see from Army, Air Force, the under center flex phone, where they are uh-huh. attacking right off the ball and coming straight at you. That dive that quarterback gives is going to happen quickly, and at the point of attack, they can get 3 or 4 yards just by moving quickly and downward. And a zone blocking scheme coming out of the shotgun, it's slow developing, and it's not going to get as fast downfield. And that showed, because LSU just had better athletes up front, the defenders, the linebackers, the safeties. They were there and quicker and faster and stronger than Georgia Southern's offensive line and running backs could handle. So that had a lot to do with why that scheme didn't work Saturday, and they were disciplined and ready to do that. They were very prepared. But, you know, that system also kind of worked against them in that phase, because they found themselves in long second downs and third downs
right.
to where they had to pass, which is obviously not part of their program. So it was a yep. pretty good showing for LSU that day.
No question. 13 true freshmen got in the game, so you answered that. Cade York delivered where he had to. Stingley, not a bad debut on the first punt return of his career. So you could see that was – you couldn't ask for a better – was anybody hurt? Because I don't recall. If they weren't,
no.
you couldn't ask for a better scenario.
No. They came out healthy. No one on the field was hurt. during the course of the game. No one had come out for injury, as far as I can remember. And you mentioned Derek Stingley. Here's the stat that sticks out to me. He had 55 punt return yards in that game. That's more than half of their entire total from last year. They had 99 punt return yards last year, and he's already got more than half of it. And he almost got more than half of it on the very first one. And through 55 at 55 punt return yards right now, he has more than they had through the first four games of last year. So already he's solved all their the problems that they were looking for last year. And then again, this is Georgia Southern and all that, but yeah, I mean, they were playing Louisiana Tech and people last year. So he's made that improvement, and it seems like a special teams unit from everyone else. Avery Atkins still kicking touchbacks. Kate York hit a 48-yarder, and you know, the punts that they had to kick very few of were there. There were no problems on the special teams then.
Ed Orgeron will have his weekly press luncheon tomorrow. Tom Herman had his press luncheon today in preview of the LSU Texas series. He recruited Joe Burrow. He got the kid to sign at Ohio State. He knows him. He likes him a lot, doesn't he?
Yes, he's very familiar with the run pass option scheme that Joe Burrow is running. Kind of the same thing that they're running over at Texas. So it's going to be very interesting to see these two offenses go against each other, because they're very familiar with what they're trying to do. And Tom Herman knows as well as anybody what Joe Burrow's skills are as a passer and a runner. Todd Orlando, the defensive coordinator at Texas, is respected throughout the nation in many ways, like Dave Aranda is. And they're going to have a game plan for Joe Burrow. And I think part of the deal on Saturday was to make sure that the wrinkles in the RPO that LSU has aren't revealed to Tom Herman, who's very familiar with those things. So it'll be very interesting to see what kind of wrinkles there are whenever they go at it on Saturday.
Texas, let it be known, they're down to two scholarship running backs. Jordan Whittington needs surgery for a sports hernia, so their leading ball carrier is Keontae Ingram. Their second stringer, Rashawn Johnson, is a converted quarterback, and their third stringer, David Gabenda, is a converted linebacker. So they run similar offenses, but I think the difference, and they have to give the advantage, I think LSU's defense is far superior to what Texas has at this point in time. Would you agree?
I think you just got to see it on the field, because there's still some questions defensively. I think secondary is good. Linebacking did well. Jacob Phillips and Damone Clark, we got a chance to see him. That did really well. But, I mean, you just got to see it against a true Power 5 program. And even the running backs at Texas, they're thin, but at wide receiver, you talk about a guy like Colin Johnson, who, the tall and athletic spot that he has, he's going to put the corners in some position. So Christian Fulton's going to really figure out, Derek Stingley, they're going to really figure out what they're worth there. And they proved that last year, too. So, like, matching up, they've proven that before. But, the edge, yes, defense is a big plus for LSU.
Facing a really good quarterback. We'll delve into it much more in depth. But, Brooks, thanks for this Labor Day treat. We greatly appreciate it. We'll see you through the course of the week. But thank you for your time, buddy.
Always, Jordy.
You take care. That's the Tiger Report, a 55-3 win over Georgia Southern. There's no moral victories in football. But if you're a raging Cajun fan, you can't be too disappointed with a 38-28 loss to Mississippi State. Nick Fontenot of The Advertiser joins us next to talk about Game 1 for the Cajuns.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Force the pass out to Nick Walston. He's into the end zone. Touchdown.
Nick Walston, as you said, graduate transfer from Arizona State, was a fullback there. He slides out. He's playing tight end now. Could have been a little push in the back there, but I think the defender was falling down. The officials don't call it. Walston hits it up that left side, and Louisiana's a point away from tying this ball game.
Raging Cajuns fall a little bit short in their season opener in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, losing to the Bulldogs from Mississippi State 38-28. The best way not to beat yourself is to not beat yourself. 5 turnovers, 3 fumbles. Remember, The Cajuns had only three fumbles all of last season. They had three in the opener, that with two interceptions. But they never gave up. They hung in there till the very bitter end, and they had a shot. Nick Fontenot covers the Raging Cajuns for the Advertiser, amongst many other things. He's kind enough to join us now. So empty-handed, I guess you can't play the shoulda, woulda, coulda game in a season-opening loss to Mississippi State, Nick. But all said and done, what was your assessment of game one?
It's one of those games where, you know, you hear coaches all the time say there's no such thing as a moral victory. This game was as close to a moral victory as I've ever witnessed or encountered or been a part of. I mean, the mood of the team after the game was nothing but positive. Napier after the game was nothing but positive. They took away a lot of positives, and they know that if they cleaned up those early mistakes, those early turnovers, if they played sound football at the beginning, they probably would have won this game. So, you know, that's the one take. My one biggest takeaway that I took away from the game was the whole time I was thinking, man, this is as close to a moral victory as I've ever witnessed at a Division I level. And I think there's a lot of positive things that the Cajuns are taking away from this game, despite the fact that they picked up a loss.
I'm with you completely. Levi Lewis seemed to settle down, finished 24 of 39, 267 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. Man, he is elusive, hard to bring down when he's scrambling around in the backfield.
Yeah, and he realized very early on that the team is going to be as good as he is. And it just took him a little while. He was very anxious at the beginning. His first pass got intercepted, and you can see that he was just maybe a little bit off at the beginning of the game. As soon as he settled down, started making plays, the team basically rallied around him. He played well, the team played well. When he played poorly, the team played poorly. And when I talked to him after the game, he 100% realized, you know, I have to play well from the beginning of the game to the end of the game. And if I can do that, then the team will sort of follow me and play just as good as I do, and that'll lead to their success. So I think he grew up a ton between the first quarter and the fourth quarter just in that game. And I think the experience that he picked up in his game, him able to come back from the early mistakes and play better towards the end, is going to pay dividends coming up here, you know, maybe against Liberty this week, but definitely when we get into Sun Belt Conference play.
Nick Fontenot, the Advertiser. I've always said this before, difference between Power 5 and Group of 5 is the big guys up front. You couldn't stop State on the ground, 261 yards. Hill was spectacular with 197 of those yards on 27 carries. When they needed to run the football, you just couldn't stop them. That's the big difference.
Yeah, that Hill kid's an impressive guy. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him, you know, moving on to the next level, maybe playing on Sundays. But, I mean, look, the SEC, you get what you get with the SEC. You know you're going to get big, strong, powerful, fast, you know, up front. And that was what, you know, that was what Mississippi State brought to the table. I thought on the other side of the ball, the Cajuns' offensive line suffered some injuries, had some guys step in. And they didn't miss a beat too much. They played really well. And we actually, today at the press conference, talked to Kevin Dotson. And he said, you know, a lot of the young guys that came in, Max Mitchell came in and Osiris came in, and those guys were very composed, being it, you know, some of the guys' first time ever playing in the Superdome against an SEC opponent. To see as composed as they were was kind of surprising to him and to a lot of us that were watching the game. So I feel like, you know, in the trenches, Mississippi State had the advantage with the size and the speed, but the Cajuns held their own, and that's why, you know, with about 3 minutes left to go in the game, they were down by only one score.
I mean, it was really a heck of an effort on their part. 27 first downs, 431 total yards. They convert 4 of 10 tries on third down. The offense seemed to be A-OK. I mean, you know, sometimes you play these Power 5 schools and you get your brains beat in, and that sets you back 2 or 3 weeks. Now you got Liberty coming to town with an ex-SEC coach coaching from a bed to heal his bad back. But this is certainly an opportunity to get this season going in the right direction. So I'm with you. It's about as close to a moral victory as you could ever expect.
And that's the history of this program, is going to play SEC teams, and even with a blowout. You know, that's what happened last year. They went to Starkville and got blown out. They went to Tuscaloosa and got blown out. So, I mean, it was not unheard of to expect that to happen again, and it didn't. And you're within one score, and if they, you know, play a little bit differently, maybe if they kick it deep, yep, instead of going for the onside, yep, kick or any number of mistakes that happened, if they clean up those mistakes, they could have knocked off Mississippi State, and that could have been just a gigantic momentum builder. Instead, you know, you're within striking distance at the end of the game, and like you said, Jordy, I think this is just one of the most positive takeaways you could take away from a loss that I've ever seen a team have, and I think they're going to be able to, you know, ride this into the season and have a pretty successful run.
Nick Fontenot, the advertiser. Hugh Freeze is the coach at Liberty. He arrived for their opener against number 22 Syracuse in what was arguably the biggest game in Liberty football history. Freeze missed nearly 2 weeks of practice because of a herniated disc in his back. He had surgery 6 days after first missing practice. He arrives at the stadium in a wheelchair. He's up in a bed helping to coach the game. I guess they're going to have to put a bed in the press box at Cajun Field. Is that the deal?
Well, Tim Buckley actually asked that question today. Would they be able to accommodate, you know, a hospital bed in the press box? And I don't think they've asked for that yet, but it may come to that. But, you know, at the end of the day, hospital bed, wheelchair, whatever, Hugh Freeze is a heck of a football coach, and he's going to have that team ready to play. And another tidbit that we found out today is that Liberty is 3-0 all time against Sun Belt Conference opponents. So
really?
They're coming in to try to win that game. Coming in to be pushed over, and Hugh Freeze is going to come in to try to knock the Cajuns off. So, yes, the Cajuns are taking a lot of positives away from the weekend, but they don't need to sleep on Liberty because that team's going to come in ready to play.
I think they'll improve as far as the turnovers are concerned. No question about that. If you had to give a game ball away, we know with LSU, Joe Burrow gets it for week one. Who gets the game ball for the Raging Cajuns?
I'd have to give it to Percy Butler. I mean, he came in, he didn't start the game, or actually he did start the game, but he wasn't listed as a starter. But he played phenomenally on the defensive side of the ball, also had a great game in the special teams. And that's what Napier even said. You know, they only give game balls for offense and defense, but if they gave a game ball for special teams as well, it would have went to Butler. So he just had a heck of a game, a heck of a debut for the Cajuns, and I can see him going on to, you know, much bigger things this season for UL.
38-28, the final. Liberty at home for the season home opener. Nick Fontenot will be there for the advertiser. Thank you for this help on Labor Day. I greatly appreciate it. Job well done. Talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, Jordy. Thanks, man.
All right. Well, we've covered LSU. We've covered the Cajuns. The Saints got down to 53, and then they made a trade to get even better with that 53. We'll talk about the practice squad as they get ready for 1 week from today, the NFL season opener in the Benz. The Houston Texans come to town without Jadeveon Clowney. NFL Talk, Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, next.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Honestly, it's been nothing short of a great experience. I've gotten to learn a lot, gotten to get close with a lot of these guys, and I've had a great time, like I said, learning and maturing throughout this entire process.
It's all about learning. It's all about maturing. The preseason is over. The NFL takes center stage this weekend. The Saints open up at home Monday Night Football as the Houston Texans come to town. Saturday at 3 o'clock was the big moment. Teams had to get down to their 53-man roster. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, here to chronicle where the Saints are. Bob, happy Labor Day to you. Thank you for your time.
And happy Labor Day to you, Jordy, and all the listeners out there. I hope everybody's having a great weekend.
We're laboring for them, and that's okay. So the Saints get down to 53. Then they make a trade. Kiko Alonso comes from Miami, Vince Beagle, an up-and-comer with the Saints, gets traded for Alonzo. What was your what was the reason behind that in your mind?
I'll tell you what. You know, first of all, you know, good luck to Vince Beagle. You know, he really showed us a good effort and some decent pass rush ability from the edge in his year plus with the Saints. So I think he's going to get a chance to shine with that Miami team that clearly is already waving the white towel on the 2019 regular season. But as far as the trade for the linebacker that they got, Kiko Alonso, I think that tells us that Craig Robertson's injury is a little bit more serious than we had hoped for. And that also possibly Alex Anzalone could be on track to miss at least the first few games of the regular season. I don't know about you. I haven't heard anything specific out of Sean Payton or the team in general.
Sean Payton says that Anzalone will be good to go for the opener. So fingers crossed on that one.
Well, good. At the very least, though, Alonzo gives this team additional linebacking depth and versatility. He can play either weak or strong side, as well as moving into the middle when you have to. I know his pass coverage at times and holding up at the point of attack has been a little bit suspect, but he also didn't have the front line in front of him in Miami that he now has in New Orleans. So I think that's going to make a big difference. I think Kiko, along with Demario Davis, Anzalone, and A.J. Klein, they're not going to have a free reign to the offensive backfield, but it's going to be pretty darn close the way that front line takes up blockers. So I'm excited to see what Alonzo is going to do in a Saints uniform.
Hey, I'm with you. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Everybody was talking about Emmanuel Butler. He doesn't make the 53, but somehow, some way, they kept him on the practice squad.
Yeah, and I was happy to see, at least temporarily, unless another franchise makes a move for him off of the Saints practice squad, that at least he's still involved with the franchise. I think it's very clear that both Drew Brees and Sean Payton had more confidence at this point in Austin Carr to keep as the additional receiver, which will sort of make sense. I mean, Carr has had a couple years in the Saints system and around Brees, and he does work the intermediate zones extremely well, which is, of course, where Breeze's strength lies.
Right,
Butler
right.
and Lil Jordan Humphrey, for that matter, they both still have some developing to do. They both showed us quite a lot in preseason and training camp practices, particularly Butler. I'm just excited that the Saints were at least able to keep those two young receivers temporarily at least involved in the franchise.
I was kind of surprised at the tight end position, both Dan Arnold and you had talked about Alize Mack, but both of those were let go. They both came back on the practice squad, so only two tight ends. But explain to everybody how the practice squad works. They can take a player off the practice squad, put them on the 53-man roster and rotate people in and out, right?
Yeah, they absolutely can. The only thing that you have a concern about your practice squad players is if another NFL franchise, they can make a move to them. But if they promote or if they sign, say Mac or anybody on the practice squad, another NFL team would have to put them on their active roster. I'm not certain whether New Orleans would then have a chance to react to that. But the only way to keep your players safe in your franchise is to promote them from the practice squad to the active roster, like you suggested. But this team, it kept some depth at receiver with Butler and Humphrey, as we just mentioned, and also with Mack and Arnold. And expect Sean Payton to kind of interchange either Mack or Arnold according to that particular week's matchups. Taysom Hill can play kind of a slot and an H-back role. So it's not like the Saints are going to go into this contest with Houston with only two tight ends. We know that they can add another offensive line in their jumbo packages move Taysom Hill around the offensive formation, as we expect them to do most of the year anyway.
Not last thing we'll talk about who's not there, but it kind of shows you where this team is heading when you can – let go of a Chris Banjo, who has been really, really good on special teams, but obviously there's better players ahead of him now.
Yeah, and you know, Banjo was a surprise to some. On my 53-man projection, I actually had them releasing Banjo, and it was a tough call for me between Banjo and JT Gray, who they did keep on the active roster. JT can give you, you know, the same kind of special teams play that Banjo would. Now, Banjo is one of the better special teamers throughout the league, like you mentioned. But Chris really, really struggled on the defensive side of the football throughout preseason. And I don't know that Banjo has been signed up by anybody yet. I know he's worked out for a couple of teams. And we'll miss him in a Saints uniform, but we certainly wish him luck. And like you pointed out, that speaks to the depth of this team. And Sean Payton himself said a couple of days before cuts, he was talking about the safety depth that his team currently has. So clearly he feels comfortable enough with Marcus Williams, Von Bell, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, Saquon Hampton, who obviously is healthy, and JT Gray to go into the regular season with.
I'm with you. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. I don't know about you, but I was thrilled to see Jadeveon Clowney traded to get that guy who's one of the better run defenders in the league. Plus, he can pressure the quarterback. I wasn't sad to see him go to Seattle.
No, not at all. But that only gives us a temporary reprieve because the Saints are still going to have to face Mr. Clowney and that outstanding Seahawks defense in a few weeks. And make no mistake, you know, like you kind of pointed out, Clowney is a well-rounded defender, but Houston still has a very good defense that this Saints offense is going to have to block extremely well to keep Breeze clean and open up holes for Kamara in that running game on Monday night.
So any concerns as this, you know, we're 1 week away, 7 days away from the kickoff of the season. What do you think the Saints are working on diligently to try to improve the most?
You got to believe it's the secondary and the communication on that back end. You know, we saw it numerous times throughout the preseason. And I'll give a little bit of reprieve to the team because a lot of times it was backups in different combinations. But we saw this Saints secondary really, really struggle to open the 2018 season for the first month or so. They cannot afford that kind of letdown on the back end to open up this season because this team is going to have to be sharp right out of the gate. You need to pressure the passer. With Cam Jordan going to be in the lineup, you know, down in and down out now like he normally would be, I'm not so much concerned about the pressure up front, but you need to have good communication on that back end to prevent big plays and hopefully make a few big plays of your own defensively.
One last one real quick. The Saints, you know, as we said, established that 53-man roster on Saturday, but there was one move that caught everybody's attention, that's rookie defensive end Carl Granderson, who was released from jail by a Wyoming district judge. He was reinstated with an exempt commissioner permission designation. He won't count against the Saints' active roster, but the Saints now have a two-week window to decide what to do with Granderson. So what do they decide to do with him?
And that's going to be a very interesting decision. I mean, they really love this kid coming out of Wyoming, you know, for what he can do on the football field. He's a solid run defender and can set the edge well, but he's a really lengthy pass rusher, you know, with some good pass rushing skills and moves, which is why they thought so highly of him. And yeah, you're right. They only have a couple weeks to make a decision on him, which is going to be interesting because it's not like they've been able to see him on the field, because of his legal problems. We see the Saints, they're going to carry eight defensive linemen into the opener, with Lon Yamada then returning to the team after week one. Rank is probably still out of the lineup for at least a month, but they're going to have to make a decision pretty quickly on Granderson. And I'm kind of sitting on pins and needles myself. I really like this kid coming out of college for what he was able to do on the football field. And thankfully his legal troubles hopefully are now behind him. But it's a difficult and unenviable situation for these defensive coaches because, again, they haven't seen him on the football field in NFL action.
Right. We will see. Bob, thank you so much for your time. I'm Bob Rose of the Canal Street Chronicles on this Labor Day. Next week, we'll be previewing game day between the Saints and the Texans. So thank you, my friend. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Can't wait to join you again.
You got it, brother. Take care. All right, we'll take a quick time out here. Remember, just a one-hour show today because the Astros coming on at 3. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Oh, what a Thanksgiving night it was back in 2016. Transformed LSU. And the two coaches in contention will meet on the field Saturday in Austin. We'll talk about it next. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Now they can play a little safer, but they're not going to. Nix is back, throws it downfield.
Wow, what a game it was. How about Bo Nix leading Auburn to a come-from-behind win in the biggest matchup of the weekend as Auburn beats Oregon, and now all sights set to Austin, Texas. It was the big boys in the SEC took care of their business, but how are you feeling if you're a Tennessee Volunteer fan? How are you feeling if you're a Missouri fan, an Ole Miss fan? Goodness gracious. He's a fan of all teams because he covers them all for Sports Illustrated. Ross Dellinger earlier this week because, again, we only have an hour show because of the Astros coming up at 3 o'clock. But Ross is kind enough to join us from Sports Illustrated today. Ross, good day, my friend. How are you?
Good, Jordy. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm a lot better than USC fans who lost their quarterback for the season. What was your biggest takeaway from week one of the college football season?
Well, it was so much, man. It was a weird first day. You had Hugh Freeze coaching from a hospital bed and a press box. You had Florida State at home blowing an 18-point lead to a true freshman quarterback from Boise State. And actually, the true freshman quarterback thing was crazy too. You know, there was three true freshman quarterbacks on Saturday led their team to a win, a comeback win on the road against a Power 5 team. You know, that's incredible. Boise State, North Carolina, and, of course, Auburn. So that was something that certainly stood out a lot as well. But, you know, also, of course, can't leave off the SEC's rough day. You know, losses to teams like Memphis and Wyoming and Georgia State and South Carolina losing to North Carolina, blowing a lead. I mean, it wasn't a great day for the bottom half of the league, and I think it tells you that it's going to be a rough go this year for the bottom half.
Yeah, I think the top half is really, really good. How about LSU? I'm calling them spread instead of Ed. I'm calling them spread Orgeron. How about that?
Yeah. You know, they talked about it all off season, and I'd heard from spring practice. I remember being on your show telling you that I'd heard from out of spring, you know, five wide receivers, no huddle, shotgun stuff. And, you know, it was true, I guess. You know, they actually did it. Now, I hate to be a doubter all the time, but, you know, will they do it in a tight game on the road? You know, we're going to see Saturday.
That's right. That is right. Which takes us to Saturday for two coaches who are on the different ends of a spectrum. One's an offensive guy. One's a defensive guy. One talks funny compared to the other. Boy, back in 2016, they certainly were very, very similar, weren't they? What a wild Thanksgiving time that was for LSU football. And you wrote a tremendous story. I've got to compliment you. It took a lot of research. You even got The Search to talk about it. How in the hell did you do that?
It helped a lot that he's no longer part of LSU's administration. You know, Joe Oliva now basically retired heading to Florida. It's easier to get people when they have, you know, retired. And I'll tell you, and Joe was great, and I do appreciate his time, but that was probably the fourth phone call that I have had with Joe Oliva. I covered LSU for 5 years. So that tells you it's not easy, but once people do move on and out of university, you know, that's usually when you can get them to talk, and that's what happened.
What is the biggest misconception we have about that? Because it was they were going to fire Les Miles, and then because of all the situation with the legislature and funding, because they had carried him off the field, he was gone, and then he gets back, and then all of a sudden he loses to Auburn where he more clock mismanagement, and then he's done, Ed's in, and he loses to Florida where Darius Geis runs the wrong way, and then all hell breaks loose, and now you got to play A&M. What's the biggest misconception about this whole thing?
Just, you're talking about just 26, you know, the 2016 search?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, the big, there's a clear misconception. It involves Jimbo Fisher. You know, I think a lot of people, even a lot of, honestly, Jordy, even a lot of pretty solid, strong reporters during that time reported some inaccurate stuff we know now. You know, Jimbo was not involved in the 2016 search hardly at all. Joe Oliva talked to Jimmy Sexton one time. And if you say, oh, well, Joe's lying to you, several other people corroborate it, you know, even on the other side. So it was just a one-time talk. He gave him a price, which was 7 years, 7.5 a year, which, you know, A&M is paying 10 years, 7.5, so pretty close.
Yes.
And as soon as they gave him that price, they just didn't think Jimbo Fisher was worth that kind of money. That's what they said. And, you know, at the time, because of how 2015 went, you know, and we knew that Jimbo was seriously talking then, that was true. 2016, it never really was, you know, and there were a lot of reports that he was involved, that Jimbo was involved, or the number one in the search. And that was never true in 2016, you know.
Okay. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Does it come down to this? If TCU beats Texas, and not the other way around, is Tom Herman the coach at LSU?
You know, I there was some reports after they had lost. You know, remember Texas that year lost to Kansas the weekend before, and there were some reports then that the decision had been made. Now, tracking down Mike Perrin, the athletic director at the time at Texas, and who hired Herman. He said that that's not true. That, you know, but a lot of people around Texas would tell you that they were already done. They were going to fire Charlie after the TCU game, no matter what. However, you know, TCU then was ranked, pretty good team. I think they might have been ranked in the top 10. If Charlie had won that game, yeah, I could totally have seen them keeping Charlie. You know, and then Tom Herman. It sounds like. You know, he was coming to LSU. It was the I's were almost, or you know, the only thing left was the I's and the T's being dotted and crossed. Now, I will tell you this: there's some people around national college football who would tell you that Tom was never going to come to LSU, even if the Texas job didn't open. That he was just anticipating the Texas job opening, and he was kind of playing with LSU, you know, a little bit, and his agent. People will tell you that. That's kind of hard for me to believe that Tom Herman would turn down LSU and stay at Houston. But I guess you never know. You know, he declined comment to me today after his news conference.
Wow. He kind of told Joe, no, I don't want to meet. They had a meeting already set up and everything was on go. And then all of a sudden, Texas, that opens up and Tom Herman cancels the meeting. And I don't think Joe was very happy. But Joe said something interesting in your story that – he always wanted Ed Orgeron, but others were high on Herman. That struck me fancy there.
Well, that's, you know, and I think that's the case at a lot of places where, you know, administrators have only a certain amount of power. Big money people, obviously, in others like board of supervisors, members, I think also have power. So it's kind of a group effort. And I'm sure that's what he was referring to. He kind of declined to go into details on that, but I would assume that he's referring to those other people who, you know, because of big money or because of their place on the board or whatnot, have significant impact on decisions like that.
It is Ross Dellinger. Must-read material. Go look it up. It's a fascinating story about a spy that LSU had, spying on coaches and all kind of stuff. A very interesting time. And now these two coaches get to meet. So early on, You know, Texas beat Louisiana Tech, and LSU wins. So real quick in 10 seconds, who do you like Saturday in Austin?
Oh, man, I'm just flip a coin, it feels like. You know, it feels like one of those games. I will say this. LSU's defense, I like LSU's defense a lot. You know, in Texas' defense, I think they've got some holes.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Ross, thank you so much. We always look forward to talking to you on a Monday, buddy. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Our time is up. We got to turn it over to the Astros now. CD, job well done. Thanks to all of our guests. Have a great rest of your Labor Day. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Tuesday, same time, same station. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette, 1037 The Game, a Delta Media station. Call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663.
My digestive system used to make me feel sluggish. Now I feel great. That's because I kicked off 2019 with the Metamucil 2-Week Challenge, and I'm still hooked. I just took Metamucil every day for 14 days. It's